Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, indeed, alongside NBA champion, co-host of All the Smoke podcast, Matt Barnes, and Hall of Fame NBA writer extraordinaire, bon vivant around town, Jackie McMullen. Always so good to have Jackie with us. And coming up, guys, the Rockets introducing new coach Stephen Silas today. Is he a good match with former MVP and three-time scoring champ James Harden? We will discuss that. First, though, today is the day. No, not apparently for finality in the election. I can't help you there. But today is the day we are supposed to get some clarity on what professional basketball is going to look like in this country over the next year. The NBA's Board of Governors has already been meeting. The Players Association is scheduled to do the same in the next few hours. And hopefully by the end of the evening, we will have an agreement on next season, starting with, well, the start date, which is expected to be December 22nd. Not everyone is thrilled about this. The Lakers' Danny Green said on a Ringer podcast last week he didn't think his team's vets would play much the first month of the season, something LeBron James then joked about with Maverick Carter and Barack Obama on the most recent episode of HBO's The Shop.
LeBron, the season's coming up. You got 10 more years, five more years. God. You look like you got about 5 to 10 when last time we seen you.
You know what, though? He's definitely going to have some minute restrictions. I'm not sure he's getting back on D the first half of the season.
First half of the season, I'm cherry picking the whole first half of the season.
Hey, you got to save yourself, man, for when it counts.
Yes, sir.
let Anthony Davis do all the work, man.
Hey, look, when Barack Obama tells you to do something, you do something. That's just how it is. It does seem like, though, despite any displeasure about the December start date, it is happening. And the reason is, as usual, that the NBA is a business that requires money to operate. According to documents obtained by ESPN, beginning the season then, as opposed to the later Martin Luther King Day start that a block of players had favored, well, that will save the league anywhere from half a billion to $1 billion in losses.
Money talks.
And we'll keep the league in good graces with its television partners, both national and local regional television networks. Now, why December 22nd specifically? Well, TNT always gets opening night when the champs get their rings, and that by definition then has to be scheduled before ESPN and ABC get Christmas Day. So 25, 26, you get it. Starting then also keeps the NBA season clear of the Olympics, which is important not because team owners really want to make sure that guys like Nikola Jokic get to play for their national teams, but because it keeps the league from having to compete with the Olympics for TV ratings. And why is the focus on TV so important? Well, because team owners have come to terms with what we frankly have been saying on the show for months, that the TV contract is the financial lifeline for a league that can't just sit around and wait for a meaningful amount of ticket-buying fans to be allowed in its buildings. Rates of COVID infection are worse than they have ever been in the United States. And look at this chart. The states the league plays in, they are simply not allowing large or even medium-sized gatherings. Look at those numbers. Seven states are only allowing 25 people in the building. They're going to have to get some sort of special exemption just to play games, right? With full rosters. Waiting for that to change means that your offseason could easily sprawl to 6-8 months, maybe even longer, which would be not good. Of course, biting the bullet and accepting that you're just not getting meaningful fan ticket revenue this season means accepting there will be less money to go around. Which brings us to the second big deal point that's being agreed upon today, how to balance the books. The league CBA says that the owners and players take the amount of revenue the league makes each year and split it, roughly 50-50. The players get their portion in the form of their salaries. That's why there's not just a salary cap each year, but a salary floor, an amount of money that teams are required to give out. The complication there, of course, is that player contracts are negotiated years ahead of time, even though you can't predict to the penny how much revenue you're going to make years into the future. So for each season, the teams hold a little bit of their player salaries back in escrow until the league gets a final number on how much money there really is to go around that year. If there's more profit, the players get the escrow money back. If there's less, the money goes back to the teams. This is all very important this year because we already know there's going to be a lot less revenue than was expected when all these contracts were negotiated. And team owners originally proposed this year they hold back 40% of player salaries. On The Jump last week, we showed you what that would mean for guys at different salary levels. That is a lot of money for some guys, and apparently eye-opening to guys like Jason Tatum, who tweeted, about our chart. And now, according to Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe, the proposal on the table is that the hit of losing that revenue will be spread out instead over 2 years. So instead of 1 year at 40% escrow, it would be 2 years at 18% escrow, which changes the salary reductions to look more like this instead. Will that be enough for players to give the okay when they vote later today? We will find out, which, considering how much else in our country is up in the air right now, is a very nice thing to be able to say. Matt, what do you think your biggest concern is if you're a player, seeing how this reported agreement looks right now with the date and the escrow stuff?
I just think the fact that, you know, key people made a long run into the playoffs, obviously into the bubble, to win a championship, in particular LeBron James. And, you know, we're creatures of habit, and 2020 has taught us anything but normalcy. So the fact that guys are going to have to come back early, I think load management is going to be a key theme for the first month or two. And people are just going to have to understand that, because at the end of the day, we saw great playoffs this year, very high energy and great competition. And if we want that this upcoming season, these guys are going to have to somehow find some time to rest.
Yeah, I think you're right on it, Matt. You know, LeBron James, who will be 36 years old next month, averaged 39.8 minutes a game over the final five games of that final. Now, by the way, Jimmy Butler averaged 44.7 minutes a game over those final five games. Why? Because they're like, look, I'll sleep later. I'll sleep when I'm dead, like Warren Zevon used to say, because they thought they were going to have a nice long rest to get ready for the next season. Now that isn't the case. So I worry not just about load management. I worry about injuries, Rachel,
yes.
Because
yeah.
The flip side of this is someone like Klay Thompson, who had a torn ACL. He hasn't played in something like, I don't know, 17 months or something crazy like that. There's a lot of players who haven't played in several months, over a year in some cases, and you worry about them as they come back. So you have these players all at different points of their conditioning and their off-season regimen. And we know, like, you take someone like LeBron, who does everything to the T, this is going to mess up the way he likes to prepare himself for a season, and he's certainly not going to be the only one.
Right. Yeah, and that's such a good point about the variation between players. You can take a look at these numbers. The proposed December 22nd start would mean a gap of only 72 days from Game 6 of the NBA Finals. So that's for the Heat and Lakers,
crazy.
Right? But less than 3 months for the conference finalists from Denver, right, and Boston. But then keep going, right? Because you've got non-bubble teams. They'll have had 6 more months off than the final 4 teams. You've got the teams that only made it right through the seeding games and didn't make it even into the playoffs. Look at them, right? You've got bubble but no playoffs, 129 days, lost in the conference finals, 86 days, made the final 72 days. That is a huge swing. How do you expect that, Jackie, to affect the different teams in those different positions?
I do, and it'll be very interesting. I'm sure all the coaches who haven't played for a really long time have spent most of that time trying to figure out how they can best maximize the idea that rest is going to be their friend, as opposed to some of these other teams who are going to be trying to figure out how to rest their players while the season is going on. It's going to be very interesting to see how different teams approach this, because I think it's going to be very different for each case.
I completely agree with that, and I'm jumping a little bit ahead in the show, but this is why I think it's a great idea to add the play-in games later, because we're going to have to consider injury. It takes a lot of luck. Some teams might be late starting that had a long run into the thing. So I think it, you know, if we get a chance to play those play-in games with that 7 through 10, as we're going to discuss later, forgive me for jumping ahead, I think it's going to do a lot of teams some justice, because it's going to take some teams time to get over injury and catch their rhythm. And normally they would be out of the playoffs in those kind of situations. But hopefully with the play-in game, which we all enjoyed this season in the bubble, it's going to give some of those teams, it's going to take a little bit longer to get their engine started, a chance to still make the playoffs.
Matt Barnes, I have no problem with you teasing what's going to come up later in the show. So viewers, stay tuned. That is excellent television. And I would just add this to the sort of things to be concerned or think about as we march forward with this new agreement. We talk about the TV deals being important, right? And it's not just us here at ESPN. It's TNT. It's the regional sports networks that need 70 games to make their contracts, things like that, because that is going to be the NBA source of money, right? But what those games look like on TV is going to be important if you want the ratings that bring in the advertising revenue, right? What made them look good in the bubble was all these virtual fans, right? It was the arenas with these huge video boards around that didn't make you see all those empty seats all the time. I don't know what arenas are going to do from place to place to make these games look on TV to some degree like they looked in the bubble. Some states, as we showed earlier, can have between 25 and 500 people in the building. Are they going to put them in suites? How would that affect video boards? Are they going to try to have some people courtside? This is all going to be a factor. Once you get this deal done, it's kind of like planning the bubble. Once you get the first part done, that just brings up 10 more questions on each branch of the tree of how are we now going to do this? How are we now going to do that? And there's still work to do ahead of maximizing these games that you've got on your schedule. So this league, like so many businesses across America at different valuations, can stay afloat as America goes through this pandemic. All right, coming up, guys, the Raptors may not be able to play in Toronto this upcoming season. That's going to be a big branch on our tree as we try to figure out what is the best place that they could call a temporary home. As the league continues to manage a basketball world still with COVID, still without fans, the Canadian government might not allow the Toronto Raptors to play games in Toronto with U.S.-based franchises. They ruled with the Blue Jays, right? Forcing the team to look toward possibly playing elsewhere to start the season. Several cities have lined up to offer their arenas, including Newark, who used to, of course, host the Nets, Kansas City, Buffalo, Louisville, and more. Remember, the Blue Jays played their home games in Buffalo during the 2020 Major League Baseball season. Matt, if they can't play games in Toronto, I was lobbying for Seattle just because I always lobby
you
for Seattle.
Seattle has to be the place. Seattle.
Well, but here's the issue. The issue is that it has to be geographically, especially if they reduce travel with divisional opponents or conference opponents this year, it has to be near the other teams that they would play more.
They need to throw that rule out. Let them go to Seattle. Seattle's a beautiful city, great fan base, and I think it would be a great test, similar to how Oklahoma City, or excuse me, the Hornets had to play in Oklahoma City when Hurricane Katrina hit.
Yeah.
It gave them a little taste and saw how good the fan base was, and obviously they moved the then Seattle Supersonics to Oklahoma. So I think it would be great to be able to get Toronto and Seattle. Obviously, they're going to go back to Toronto eventually, but then maybe they can move a team that's in one of these gross cities in the league to Seattle.
He's what? To come on, come now, Matt.
Hey, there's some pretty gross cities in the NBA.
We are not. We all cities are good cities. All NBA cities are good cities. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Jackie, what do you think?
Yeah, and we all do love Seattle. We all have, you know, great memories of Seattle. But I'm going to give you a different answer. That initially I was like, why is Louisville involved in this? And I did a little research.
Great college.
And
town.
The person that's pushing this is none other than Ulysses Junior Bridgman, formerly of the Milwaukee Bucks. Great trivia question because he's part of the trade that bought Kareem from the Bucks to the Lakers. But not only that, I got to know Junior a little bit through some work through the Hall of Fame. I was on a few committees with him. He's one of the sharpest people I've been around in basketball. He's innovative. He's smart. He stands up to people. He's got great ideas. And he's the one pushing this idea in Louisville. Of course, he played for Denny Crum at Louisville. So I'm throwing my weight behind Junior Bridgman.
All right. Well, I hate to break this to you. I have not heard good things about Louisville being the choice, but we'll see. It's all still open.
I know, but I think if anyone can do it, Junior can. Hey, I got my
still,
money on Junior.
They're still counting votes for
they're
these
still
cities.
Counting votes. They're absolutely still counting votes. And it is interesting, this question of geography, right? So the reason Newark has gained some steam is you could put them in an NBA-style arena, and they would just be in that same triangle with the Knicks and the Nets. And so that if you did have teams in trying to reduce travel in a COVID era coming in to play just sort of a swath of games, and they could knock out all three teams without leaving the same hotel or being on the same set of buses or anything like that, that would be appealing to the league. But Matt, do you really think that the league should consider maybe altering, if not the conference structure for this year, but the way the Raptors play their games? I mean, that's what it would take to do Seattle, because you would then have to sort of group them more with Portland in terms of when regional teams came to play them. And obviously it would be Western Conference teams more often.
I just think the way the year's been going, I don't think anything should be off the table immediately. One thing I do have trust is, and somehow, some way, Adam Silver and his committee always seem to get things right. So I have a lot of confidence that they'll make the right decision. But I just think, as a former player, someone who got a chance to play in Seattle as a visitor, just such a great city, great energy, great restaurants, great view, great fan base. And I know that city is thirsty to have a team, even if it's just for a season.
I like that point too, right? This has been a year of unconventional thinking. This has been a year where we had a different teams getting into the playoffs in a different way than we've ever had before. If you're going to mess with that, maybe it's okay to mess with some of the rotation of division and conference, the number of teams you play, the number of times, just to get a team over to Seattle for a year. I'm just saying, I'm not ready to give this up either, Matt. I'm just saying, if the Raptors are displaced, they will be the only team to be based away from home. So, Jackie, what do you think the biggest disadvantages are for Toronto if they have to play their season at another location, given that there won't be huge amounts of fans in any building? So it's not like just not being near the local fans will be as much of a factor.
Everything. Think about this now. The Toronto Raptors had to go to that Orlando bubble early because they were a Canadian team. So they were, as hard as it was for everybody else to be in that bubble and all the things that we heard, and including some of the stress of the mental health aspect of that. Now you're going to ask this team, just a couple of months later, to now literally move away for a year and go play in another city. And just keep on going, keep on trucking. And I think it's a big ask, and I understand it's no one's fault. It's the policy of the Canadian government. But I think it's just a really tough order for the Toronto Raptors to have to do this on the heels of an already very unusual year. It's a lot to ask.
I could personally assign some fault over why people don't want people from the United States traveling back and forth to their countries, but I'm going to lay off that for the day. Matt, what do you think?
I definitely think it's a tough call. People have to understand we're creatures of habit, and our habit and habitat has been truly disrupted in 2020. So for them to have to go somewhere else and play, it's going to be tough away from their family. But like I said, the mental aspect of the game is a lot. But the one thing I will say about this team is they're very mentally tough. They're a very mentally tough team, and starting with Kyle Lowry and Nick Nurse, and it goes down the line. So if any team can relocate and still salvage and have a very solid season, I feel like the Toronto Raptors can do that.
I do believe that with you as well. I do want to say, I mean, I don't think they'd have to be away from their families. I think the idea is that their families would come relocate with them. But again, every branch of the tree has a bunch of more sprouts. That means kids have to be in new schools.
Right.
It means, right, Jackie? I mean, there's
a bunch
of stuff
there. And Rachel,
you
have kids.
Yeah.
I mean, right, Rachel, you have kids, school-age kids. How'd you like to tear your kids away for a year to Newark and then have them, you know, have to go back to the Canadian school? That's a lot. That's a lot to ask.
And it's really, too, just like being a free agent on a one-year deal. You know, you never know where you're going to be next year, and I guess now you're putting a whole team on a free agent deal, so to speak. You know what I mean? So you're comfortable in Toronto, and then next year you're on another team. So this is just a situation where the whole team has to move cities now. So at least they'll still have some familiarity with their team.
Right.
Hopefully their families can join. But like I said, this is a very mentally tough team that starts at the top, so they'll be able to figure it out.
It is a lot. And as Jackie noted, this is because of the Canadian – it's not an NBA issue. It's nothing that the NBA can just solve and decide, like, we're not going to make the Raptors do this. It is because the Canadian government, like so many other governments around the world, have said, hey, the way the United States has handled its coronavirus problems is not the same as we have, and we don't want people coming back and forth across the border without a two-week, 14-day in-home quarantine, and that is just not possible if you're an NBA team. If you're an opponent traveling in and out to play the Raptors, or if you're the Raptors themselves, you can't stay locked in a room for 14 days before every single game. It's just not going to happen. So it is likely that unless things significantly change, the Raptors will have to relocate. It is a huge extra question in a year with so many extra questions. All right, coming up, the NBA loved the first playoff play-in game so much, as Matt said. They're going to try to expand the play-in games to include 7 to number 10 seeds. But should they? Stay tuned. We will get much deeper into that coming up next. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside Matt Barnes, Jackie McMullen. Last season, guys, as we saw the first play-in game of its kind, the Blazers held off the Grizzlies to secure a playoff spot after a really exciting finish to those seeding games in the bubble. Now, as Woj and Zach Lowe reported this week, the NBA wants to expand to include all teams seeded 7 through 10 in both conferences as another avenue of potential revenue. The proposal would also continue the better seed only needing to win one game, remember, while the lower seed would win two. But there would not be any qualifier for a team to be eligible just hitting those seeding marks. Now, remember last year, teams had to be 4 games or closer to trigger the play-in scenario. That's why we didn't get one in the Eastern Conference. Now, if this had happened last season, the play-ins would have included the Nets and Magic playing the Hornets and Wizards. While in the West, we would have had Portland and Memphis, but also Dallas and Phoenix. So, Jackie, are you in favor of expanding the play-in games? Because it was interesting. Dallas would be included in this scenario. Remember Mark Cuban when all this bubble talk was going on? He was like, I think a play-in game is great as long as it's not going to involve my team possibly missing out on a playoff spot we've already clinched.
Right. And you can understand why Mark Mark felt that way, Rachel, because his team was so close in the standings that he could have easily been, his team could have been in fourth place. That's how close they all were. So I just got used to the play-in. You finally convinced me it was a good thing, this 7-8-9 thing. I just got used to it. Now you're going to ask me to have more teams join? I understand it's a revenue gimmick and that's why they're doing it. But I don't think it's a good idea because I do, especially without that assurance that if the team isn't within four games, now you're giving a team that might be way out of the pack a chance. And I'm not sure that's fair to the other teams that performed really well during the course of the season.
I like it. I think it brings exciting basketball. You can't let your foot off the gas if you're in the bottom, you know, six, seven, eight spots heading towards the playoffs. But then, like I touched on at the beginning, with us starting only really 2 months after the last season ended, we knock on wood praying that there's no injury. There's probably going to be some injuries, and I think it's going to take some teams a while to really catch their footing. So to me, you want the hottest teams at the right time going into the playoffs, and this is a perfect opportunity to have the hottest teams at the right time. It could be a 10 seed. It could be a ninth place team playing hot at the right time, and maybe they had guys hurt throughout the duration of the season, and now everyone's healthy, and it gives them a fair chance to get in the playoffs. So I like it from a standpoint of, I thought the play-in game this year was great. The energy was great. It was very competitive. And like I said, it's going to give teams that took a little while to get their engine started in an awkward season a chance to make the playoffs still.
You know, Jackie, you and I are always on the same page of don't cheapen the regular season at all, right? The regular season matters. Don't water down your own product. If you tell people enough the regular season doesn't matter, they will start to believe you, right? That's why load management is potentially a problem. I do think it's possible that this would actually make the regular season matter more. As Matt says, it would make teams that are maybe 9 or 10 seed who think they're out of it and would just start sort of resting everybody and playing younger players in late February and March or whatever that translates into this coming season, that they would be more engaged later. And I actually think for the teams in the 5, 6, 7 spot, they would be more engaged during the regular season because it wouldn't be like, oh, earning seventh place doesn't matter because then you've got to face these playing teams. It would be, my God, let's not be in seventh place. Let's make sure we're in fifth or sixth place. So I think hopefully it would do the thing that I know is important to both you and me, which is keeping the regular season important. And maybe that would happen.
But I just feel.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right. I was going to say the only thing I would add to that is you guys, we can't have it both ways. We were just talking about this season starting sooner and that we're going to have load management and resting players. So if we're going to do that and then we're not going to rest players because of the standings, I mean, you got a little bit of a quandary there. I do like this. Like if you're going to do it, just say it. Call it what it is. It's a revenue producer. At least call it what it is.
Yeah. Right. Look, I said at the top of the show, the NBA is a business that needs money to operate. And it right now operates at a very high money level with people making hundreds of millions of dollars who would like to keep making hundreds of millions of dollars. And that requires lots of revenue coming in. Another concept of figuring out how to schedule games to minimize travel is a no, or you know, because it's no or small fans environment outside the bubble. The Athletic's John Hollinger reporting a potential baseball series style setup with teams playing their entire series in the future. So here's an example of what that could look like, right? The Lakers, for example, could play all three season games against the Rockets at once over the course of a week, hosting them here in Los Angeles. And then the following week, they would do their entire series against the teams in Florida, right? So they could do two games at Miami and two games at Orlando, and that's that. Obviously, when you have fans in the building, you don't want to do it this way because you want to spread out when different big stars come to your town. You want to give people different opportunities to see them. You want to get different markets the opportunity to have those home and home. Matt, that's not as important, right? If there aren't real meaningful fans in the building, do you buy this as a feasible option?
I'm not a big fan of it, maybe because I don't understand it enough. Like, how does it balance out? Like, how do you decide if the games are going to be in L.A. or going to be in Houston? I think it's going to shortchange fans in that situation. But like I said, this is just an awkward year. I think we're all just crossing our fingers that we get out of this year alive, quote unquote. So it's just going to be weird. They're going to try new things. Some may work, some may not. But like I said, with Adam Silver at the helm and Chris Paul at the head of the Players Association, they always seem to kind of find the right situation and make it work. And this is no different.
Right. I mean, I don't think anybody would love this. I agree with you, Matt. But I think in this case, it's just simply a pragmatic thing to do in the interest of safety. And I, for one more year, hopefully only one more season, That's what I think the NBA is looking at when they talk about this. And from a pragmatic safety standpoint, it does make some sense. So you just swallow hard and let this roll for just the 1 year.
Yeah, and that's, again, another version of, hey, new branch on the tree. It has a bunch of other sprouts coming from it. One of the things that's going to happen if you schedule this way is, what if you play a team three times in a row in 1 week and that team's major star is injured? Right? I mean, then we're not possibly getting the matchups. We had a Lakers-Houston situation, right, on that example. Well, what if James Harden is out for that week? Or what if LeBron James is out for that week? And you're not getting one of the premier matchups in the Western Conference and possibly, Western Conference Finals or however you got, we all love to gin up the predictions on any game. This is a Western Conference Finals showdown. Either way, you're not getting it.
We're good at that.
All right, and we are. And that's another complication. As you say, Jackie, it just might have to be one of them. But again, expect so many different parts of this to be playing out over the next 6 to 8 weeks as they try to figure out how to start the season at the end of next month. All right, coming up on this show, ABC Station 19 star and NBA fan Boris Kodjo joins the show. Always good to have him. First, though, here is what The Jump recommends for today. Zach Lowe releasing an all-encompassing off-season primer. And when I say all-encompassing, people, there is everything in here. He's got Giannis, he's got Bradley Beal, and Victor Oladipo, whether they can be traded. I'm telling you what may happen in the draft. So much more. Read it during the break, but keep your TV on. We've got so much more coming up. Our next guest on the fabulous ABC show, Station 19, Boris Kodjo. Welcome to The Jump. We're so thrilled to have you.
Hey, I'm super excited to be with you guys. What a stank attitude I have. See, that's terrible.
All with the face. When you're in a hospital bed, you got to act with the face. You, of course, play firefighter Robert Sullivan on Station 19, premieres next Thursday on ABC. And I just want to know what's in store, right, for the new season, especially when you're playing a character like this on a show that involves so much action at this very different time, right?
I think it's great, because, our writers, led by Krista Vernoff, they aren't scared to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. They aren't scared to have the dialogue that needs to be had right now. We're dealing with not just one pandemic, we're dealing with three.
Yep.
We got the health pandemic, the economic pandemic, we have the social justice and systemic racism pandemic that's going on. And I think when you have a platform like this, you can't ignore those conversations to be had. And so, of course, we're dealing with our personal stuff on the show, but it's all in front of a backdrop of COVID. And I hope people can relate and identify with it, and maybe it'll ignite some dialogue that needs to be had.
I love that. And the parallel, too, to the athletes, because, Matt, we've talked about this so many times over recent months. The world comes in to sports and entertainment. It's not like you guys can pretend on your show or in our sport or anything like else like that, that the world isn't happening. And one thing I love about your show is that you really bring all of those issues in, for sure.
And we shouldn't. We shouldn't. And I admire you guys. Matt, you've always been super outspoken and authentic. I really respect that about you. And everybody's using their platform to have those dialogues and to also affect some positive and tangible change. And that, the NBA season that we just watched was another piece of evidence that spoke to how to use a platform effectively to have an impact on society, which we need. We're in such a pivotal moment in our history that we can't ignore that.
Boris, I wonder how difficult it is to accomplish all these goals that you're speaking of against the backdrop of COVID-19. And I'm sure the rules, just like for us, are different for you when you're filming Station 19.
I would think it's probably similar because they've kept us safe with all these safety protocols, masks and face shields. We're getting tested every 2 days. We're divided in pods of 20 people so that everybody in the crew is safe. If one, God forbid, would test positive, we could isolate it to those 20 people. Those are all measures that had to be taken to keep us safe. And we also have to buy into it, as a collective, not just on set, but also at home, because obviously our families are being exposed to a risk. As soon as you go to the grocery store, the kids go to some, event or something, you gotta stay safe. So it takes a collective effort and a commitment to do that.
So that actually leads to my next question. I know you met your wife, or I guess you started dating your wife, at least on the set of Soul Food, and then you guys both did Brown Sugar today, playing opposite love interests. I'm curious how that evolved, and now you do have a wife who's an actress who's home raising kids and also acting, and how that all works for you guys.
You know, we met in a working environment, so that's nothing new for us. I had always had tremendous respect for her as an actress. She's incredible. And now we're raising kids together. I mean, it's a blessing. Obviously, it comes with challenges, as everybody can relate to, especially in a pandemic. But, you know, as it pertains to our kids, we try to have the conversations that need to be had every single day. You know, we have dinner together, and our kids are curious. They're insightful. They're smart, and they want to know about the world. So we don't hold back. We tell them the truth, and you know, social justice and systemic racism is part of that. They ask a lot of questions, and I try to do my best in raising them in a way that gives them the tools to be part of the solution.
Absolutely. I think that's important, too. I'm having these similar conversations with my soon-to-be 12-year-old twins tomorrow. It's just how what the world is like right now. And to me, to sugarcoat it, I'd be doing them an injustice. So to keep it real and give them bite-sized pieces of what they're heading for, I think is most important. You played in the NBA Entertainment League in the past. How competitive was that, and who are some of the people that stood out in that league to you outside of yourself?
It was very competitive. I mean, we had a lot of injuries weekly, you know, all these weekend warriors. But I loved it. I had a great time. I mean, growing up in Germany, I played basketball, I played soccer, and then I turned to professional tennis after that. But it gives you an outlet. You know, now I use sports every single day as an outlet. You know, there's so much out there right now that you can be frustrated about. Look at the elections. That's why I don't
have
any hair anymore.
We're all trying to take a 1 hour break from watching the election returns. Come on, Boris.
That's great. Absolutely. I mean, I can't, you know, what really struck me about the elections is that this guy got 5 million more votes than he got last time when he was elected. That's the reality we're dealing with. Forget about who's going to be elected. This is what the country looks like. Mm. This is the makeup of this country right now. And that's what we should be talking about, how we can reduce the divisiveness, how we can reduce the rhetoric, how we can actually come together as a nation again and figure out how to make it a more just and equitable place to live in.
Absolutely. And if you figure out how to solve all those problems, please get back to us here on The Jump. I do want to
give me about 30 minutes,
all right? 30 minutes just to figure it out. That's good. That's good. I'll give you 35. That's how I am.
Thank you.
I do want to ask you about basketball just a little bit. LeBron, of course, the Lakers won the NBA title. Anthony Davis, what was your reaction to seeing that pairing, to seeing that team? And do you think that they will repeat next season?
You know, I love this season because for the first time in years, we got some real parity. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of two-star teams this season, but obviously Bron and AD stood out. Clippers, Houston. We had some new stars in Jokic and Murray come on the scene. I loved what Miami did with Jimmy and his roster. So I'm really looking forward to next season. Do we know when it starts yet? I mean, are they starting like next week or something crazy?
Exactly.
When are they starting?
Next week. Next week is good. Let's just say next
right?
week.
I mean, come on. This is we've been waiting so long and to have that abbreviated sort of version in the bubble. You know, much props to Adam Silver and the whole team for putting that together. And also to all the players, because they've really done an amazing job using their platform to raise awareness and to make a lot of noise around those issues that we just mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. You know what does start next week? I know for sure. Station 19 starts next week.
That's
everyone
right.
Look for the premiere. Best of luck with that, Boris. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining us. The rest of you guys stick with us because coming
Thanks,
up,
Boris.
We're going to talk a little bit about James Harden, Stephen Silas. Are they a good fit together in Houston? It's crunch time here on The Jump. If you knew and loved that era of Warriors basketball, you are not alone. The team unveiled their Oakland Forever jerseys, and Matt is a member of the We Believe Warriors, who of course played in Oakland. Do you like this homage to your group?
I love it. I love it. One thing I realized when I got a chance to go back for that 17 championship run is there's still so much love for that team there, mm-hmm. not only by the city, but by current players. You know, Steph, KD, Clay, Draymond, they were all with the We Believe movement. So I think it's a great move and a great honor because they lost a tremendous fan base moving from, although it's not far, that Oakland crowd is going to be a lot different than the new crowd at that San Francisco stadium.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Your group did not win a title, and yet...
We won one series.
Right?
But we captured the hearts of...
Just as popular as the team that won three rings. And including from, as you say, the team that won three rings feels that way, too.
This way.
This video is amazing. Pacers forward Alize Johnson surprising his family by buying them a new house. He posted the video to his Instagram account. Jackie, how would you react if you were surprised with a new house by one of your kids?
I would say, did you rob my bank account? My kids can't afford to buy me a house, but I would certainly appreciate the sentiment. What I love about this is Alize hasn't bought a house for himself yet.
That's
he bought
awesome.
It for his mom first. God bless him. Good for you.
I mean, I think that's the dream of players. You know, you always want to take care of your family, your mom in particular. I lost my mom too soon before I was able to actually do that. You know, I got my dad a car, but tremendous show of respect. I mean, mom's brought us into this world, so I couldn't be happier for him and his mom. And the fact that he got his mom a house before himself, I think, is a tremendous gesture.
The amount of sacrifice that NBA parents make to get their kids to that point is a story I don't think we tell enough, frankly. And I love seeing this. I'm a little emotional, just not going to lie. Let's talk about the Rockets. They officially introduced Steven Silas as head coach today. Congratulations to him. A 22-year run as an NBA assistant. I said the other day he is as qualified to be a first-time head coach as it is possible to be. Woj and Tim McMahon also on John Lucas. Here's Silas on changes to the office.
For me to come in and make wholesale changes, that doesn't make sense to me. What I will do is try to make it a little bit easier on those guys, put in a few little actions that'll make the defense have to make decisions and make them a little bit harder to guard, be a little bit more versatile on the offensive end, and again, let those guys play to their strengths, getting defenses on the move early in possessions and keeping them on the move, that sort of thing. Not so much kind of stand around ISO type stuff, even though there will be that and there will be times for that because that's what they do well.
So, Matt, do you like hearing that? What do you think of the match of Steven Silas and James Harden in Houston?
It's yet to be determined, but I can piggyback off of what you said. I mean, he's definitely qualified. He's paid his dues. His dad was a longtime coach. I had an opportunity to play for him with the We Believe team. He was an assistant coach, and he's a very mild-mannered person by nature. But I say all that to say, sometimes as an assistant coach, you kind of have to play your role as players do. I think he'll be able to show a little bit more of his personality and he's definitely going to have to be an authoritative figure, so to speak, with this situation, because I feel like that's kind of what that team may need. Not much, but he's definitely going to have to kind of come out of his quiet demeanor, to coach this team.
Yeah.
Right. You know, honestly, this kind of bugs me, Rachel, a little bit that we're asking about this. And I know why we are, because others were talking about that Harden had someone else in mind that he may have wanted to be the head coach. Let's give Steven Silas a chance. He didn't just come down and say, hey, my dad's Paul Silas. Can you hire me? This guy went through the ranks. Uh-huh. He was an advanced scout. I had front office people tell me how hard he worked. He started at the bottom, worked his way up. Had great relationships with Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Kemba Walker, all scoring players in the NBA. He knows how to work with superstars. Let's give James Harden and Steven Silas a chance to have a great relationship before we all start wondering if it's going to work. Steven Silas deserves better than that,
absolutely,
in my opinion.
Well, I mean, look, again, we've been laying out his qualifications on the show all week. I think that there's no question that he is prepared for this job. The question is, what is he going to do to solve a difficult puzzle? I mean, you have Mike D'Antoni, incredibly respected coach, who obviously didn't solve it to the degree that they needed to. So I think there's just a lot of questions about what this very qualified head coach is now going to do next.
I think sometimes you just need to change the scenery and a new voice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With all due respect to D'Antoni, his voice was worn out in that locker room. Hopefully this fresh voice will bring new energy to this team because they're very talented, as we all know.
Yep. And as I mentioned briefly, Adrian Wojnarowski and Tim McMahon reporting that John Lucas will stay with that staff. I know that is an important piece, not only to James Harden, but to several of the guys there and someone obviously who is an asset in Houston. All right, guys, before we go, I do want to tell the employees facing layoffs at ESPN today, how much they're going to be missed. Nearly every major American company, right, has had some form of layoffs or furloughs this past year. But just because it's happening everywhere doesn't make it any less hard. I can say for sure the people are the best part of coming to work each day here at ESPN. We are with you.
We appreciate it.